Hello and welcome to The Good, The Scaz and The Rugby with me, Alma Smith, together with our friends at Allianz. A Captain Emily Scarrett is in the house. This is her podcast after all. Mike is here. Plenty to get into from the opening round of the Six Nations, but just hold that thought. Because our guest this week might just have the most remarkable CV of any player in any sport. And I know that's a big statement to make, but I want to welcome her right up top. She took up the game at the age of 25 and then represented England within 2 years, which in and of itself, like, you could actually just stop there. But then she did have to ask permission to do so because she was also training with the Kent Fire and Rescue Service, as you do. And before that, she represented England in Hammerthrow at the Commonwealth Games in 2014. She's been a gas engineer and a qualified commercial diver. Welcome to England and Harlequin's prop and superwoman, Shauna Brown.
Hello. You make me sound a bit good. And usually, like, you've got a CV like that, it'll be like non-committal, gets bored easily, doesn't stay in the job. Actually, you made me sound great, so I'll take that.
And that is impressive. I'm just going to log off anyway and leave you to it. Bye.
Emily, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. We're one game in, obviously, now, aren't we? Different hotel, different environment. Wi-Fi, I think, is a little worse than the last place. So we both of us might drop out at some point. But yeah, all good. Off to Italy tomorrow. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Before we get really stuck into it, Shauna, what was it like having Emily be the captain over the weekend?
An honour and a privilege. She's a very chilled captain. Won't talk unnecessarily. When Emily wants to talk, like, everyone listens because it's like, right, it must be serious. And we must, like, we need to concentrate in on something. So it's very much when she does speak, it's always something like real positive and real needed to say. So it's the ability to, and even like volume levels as well. She doesn't shout and it's very much a right kitten. And then that makes you tune in and listen because she's like, I really want to hear what she's got to say. She's done a great job, if I do say so myself.
Did she actually tell anyone? Because I think she forgot to tell most people. But did she actually tell the team that she was captain? Or was that did the coach do that?
You just know, didn't you?
Telepathy. Yeah. She's on that level. That probably sums Scaz up, really. She's on that level. She doesn't actually communicate by actual words. She's just in your head. You hear it and you do it.
When did you tell your mom and dad? Because the only reason we found out is because someone else in our WhatsApp group told us. And I saw it and I went, surely she should have mentioned this. Like, this is a pretty big deal. And then I heard you didn't tell your mom either.
I think I actually did tell my parents this time, but in one of the previous occasions, I think maybe back in the autumn when I was captain, like, Sarah Hunter was injured, unfortunately. I forgot to tell them. And then the press release came out. It obviously says a little C next to it. And they were like, yeah, cheers. And I was like, oh no, yeah, I just forgot. It's one of those things, isn't it? I'm not the sort of person that's going to send a broadcast message. I'd rather see how they are, check in, and then they can figure that bit out later on.
My mum would be the type of woman, she'll see, well, she won't see a C next to my name, but if she did see a C next to my name, she'll be like, what is a C stand?
what have you done wrong?
Exactly, you're on the naughty step again.
So did they thank you this time for telling them and giving them a heads up so that they don't just read it somewhere?
I can't remember what they said this time. My dad and brother are super busy at the moment on the farm, so they always give me a little thumbs up and a good look and whatnot. But my family's pretty chill. Like, we're really close. We all obviously get on like house on fire and I love them to pieces. But yeah, we tend not to make big deals out of stuff. They're all really proud and I'm super proud of what they do. But yeah, we don't kind of shout it from the rooftops. That's just how we are.
When you say thumbs up, is it that emoji?
That's all my dad can do, bless him. He's a stereotypical farmer. His technical abilities are really, really bad. So you either call him or you text him and that's all you expect back.
You could get him off the Nokia 3210 and actually give him a smartphone. He might be able to move it on.
Honestly,
he's still playing Snake on the tractor.
We got him a smartphone last time around and he hasn't got a clue, bless him. So every couple of weeks he has to open it all up to blow all the dust out of it. Yeah, he used to have one of those phones. Do you remember those phones that had they connected from either side? They were like waterproof, bounce proof. He basically still wants that phone.
Yeah. I envy that though, some ways. Don't you think it'd be great just to not actually live your life through your phone? I think that'd be amazing sometimes.
Certainly. Okay, so you led your country out in an empty stadium. At least you left with a very respectable scoreline, but tell me about the experience about leading.
Yeah, it's cool. Like Shauna said, I'm not a shouty kind of captain, so I generally employ others to do that if it's necessary. But yeah,
who are your foot soldiers? Who are your foot
soldiers? Come
on. I got Marley Packer to get stuck in the changing room.
She played well on the weekend. I could see she's like really annoying and feisty, so she'd be perfect.
Yeah. We had a few like breakdown and physical messages that we wanted to share. So that's never really going to come over that well from me. So it was getting someone like Marley Packer fired up to deliver one of those. Abby Ward as well, she's pretty good at getting stuck into people, stuff like that. But to be fair, there's loads of people, and loads of people will chip in with their own points when they need to. But yeah, leading the team out was awesome. Obviously, it's weird because there's no crowd and we keep talking about it, but obviously we want crowds back. But yeah, it was still cool nonetheless. Obviously, it was on the BBC, which was awesome. So lots of people could tune in. I don't know the figures, but I hope they were decent. Yeah, so may that continue.
I don't know if it annoyed you on the field. It annoyed me watching is when the referee had to go to the TV that was, especially on the one that was miles away from the try. You're just like, surely the TMO can do this for her and just give her the actual answer. So if it's a red card or the potential of a red card, then I get that she should be involved in the discussion. But if it's just for a try, for her to blow time off and then have to run 30 seconds, she didn't sprint mind either. She jogged all the way over there. But at one point she was literally doing shuttles, and I was like, oh.
Her GPS would be through the roof, I think. Yeah, that was definitely frustrating. She scuttled over to this little screen, and every time you could see them doing this, because I think the sun was really shining on it as well. I don't think it was a particularly good picture. But yeah, there wasn't a big screen at the ground, and there wasn't even a clock. So that, for all of us, we were left guessing on lots of things. But yeah, hopefully this weekend.
I mean, that's the only thing that frustrates me, because you're on TV, you've got the ability to be pushed out to, like, you don't want it being a stoppy, starty game because of those decisions. And that was frustrating me a little bit.
Frustrating. That's probably one of the frustrations that we felt second half, was just that, like, first half, we tempo, firing into them, kind of how we wanted to play. And then second half was just stifled and dampened a little bit. And obviously those decisions and those timeouts didn't help that. And then it's quite hard to get that back. Obviously, lots of changes happen as well, so things are constantly changing in that second half. It's quite hard to get that momentum back and play the way we want to play. But the result is still an awesome result for us, so we're pretty happy.
It was, wasn't it? It was just that. It was really disjointed in that second half. Obviously, Shauna, you came on. Like, because in all fairness, Scotland, they had quite a good bit of possession in the first 20 minutes of that second half, but yet they weren't really scoring, and they'd make a mistake, then you guys would give a penalty away, and it was sort of, you couldn't get your hands on the ball, and then when you did, it was, you'd made a lot of substitutions, so there's a few more knock-ons, there's a little bit of, you know, getting back to playing. How frustrating was it? But it's very hard to, obviously you went off, Emily, towards the end of it. How would you have changed it to make it better? I thought possibly not making as many subs as you did, but
that's when it all goes downhill, when Emily goes off the pitch.
You just, like, get on there and carve up. You're just running into people, get your energy, expend the energy.
In terms of possession across the whole game, Scotland actually had more than us. We was on a 51-49 split, and like, I came on and the first thing I did was tackle again straight away. And actually, I've noticed that's just what I do in an England shirt. I pretty much just tackle. So I try and get my hands on the ball, but if you haven't got the ball, that's all you can do. Yeah. But it's part of, number one, being a finisher, but also part of rugby and learning how to, being able to stop, start, and trying to get back into it and bringing subs on. And as a sub, like, you've got to get on board as soon as possible. You can't take sort of 5, 6, 7 minutes to settle in for the game. If you're only getting 15, 20 minutes, that, you can't take that long. So that's part of a separate skill set in being able to get into them, get into the game straight away. And for me, like, just hitting things, whether we're defending or attacking, just hitting things, I'm like, right, I'm here now, ready to play. And it's a completely forward mentality. And I can imagine no back would ever say that. But that is
our roles are so different. They are so different.
I was a bit like a forward, Shauna, so I get what you're saying.
But speaking of forwards and backs, there are so many people who would often espouse, particularly on WhatsApp groups and comment sections, that they prefer forwards as captains. So taking over the captaincy when you're playing centre, I mean, Mike, you have some experience of that as well. Is it as crucial to be a forward if you're leading a team, particularly in a test match, you know, international rugby environment?
I think it all depends on the team. I think, you know, if you look at the team that Emily's leading, there's quite a lot of leaders in that pack anyway, so they'll be onto the ref. The frustrating thing of being at 13 and being a captain is your distance away from being right on there and being able to say something to the ref without it taking 5 seconds and him being bored by the time you get there and sending you back. And that is the frustration. But as I said, if you have those people that you can rely on, whether it be Poppy Cleal or whoever it might be, or Shauna when she comes on. I'll say Shauna because she's on, and then don't want to upset her. We need her to keep coming back on. You know, as long as you've got those people you can rely on and who are going to be on the same message as what you want as captain, then it's not too bad, but it's sometimes frustrating. I mean, I remember when we played Wales in a warm-up game and Toby Flood before the World Cup in 2011, and we wanted to win the game, but also we wanted to work on our gameplay. But I wanted to make sure we won the game. So easy threes, take them all day long. And Floody just kept kicking them into the corner before I could get there. And I'm like, Floody. But and then we lost the game. And I get blamed for not taking points. And I'm like staring Toby going, it's your fault. No, but I won't throw you under the bus. So there are frustrations. But I think if you've got the people around you, which I think Emily does, then you're all right.
I had a conversation with the referee beforehand, as I always do, and basically said, if there's anything at the scrum and the line out, unless it's really serious, just talk to Abby Ward, because I'm not going to know how to fix it or the detail of it. So if you're happy to talk to her, just go through her. And then obviously when bigger things arise, then maybe I can come into the fold a little bit. But yeah, to try not to get too involved with scrums and line outs, that's for sure. I know my role with that.
Shauna, what's your ideal captain? We're, obviously, you've just pretend. Just put your hand over Emily's face. Do you want to do the fur in the forward? Do you prefer a shouter, or what do you look for personally?
I particularly like a shouter or a swearer. I don't mind a shouter if they don't normally shout, because then I know it's serious because they're shouting. That's about as technical as I can get.
You don't need an emotional driver. Do you need someone who emotionally drives you, or are you more detail?
I say none of the above. Just I'm not about detail at all. Let's do this. I like a good hug when you squeeze in and like, yeah, yeah, we can do this. And that, yeah, you just, as long as it leaves me going, yeah, yeah.
You just want people around you then, don't you? You don't care what's said or what the plan is. You just need people around you.
Yeah, and I like a good clap celebration. We do our clap as well now, and that's like, for me, that's what gets me pumped, is like everyone together say something. Yeah, ready.
It's almost more like a drum circle than a team.
Yeah. I'll tell Sarah Hunter that no matter what she says, she's not going to make an impact on you.
You can do. As long as she goes yeah at the end, I'm like
yeah.
But that's amazing, because you literally, I mean, Emily, I'm sure there has to be some shift, you know, in terms of the social dynamics, because now suddenly there's this additional amount of responsibility, and as you can tell from Shauna, different things work for different people. Is there something that happens in that week before a game where you kind of start looking at everyone a little differently and feel a bit more responsible for their frame of mind? And
you're definitely more conscious of it, I've learned, and obviously when we spoke to Kate Richardson, well, she articulated some of it really well. You can't be all things to all people, and naturally everybody's going to want and need something different if they were picking their ideal captain or spokesperson or whatever. So it's just about being authentic, being you. Yes, you have to spend a bit more time at the laptop, doing the game plan, scrutinising things a bit more. You know, maybe when everyone else has clocked off on Netflix, you're still just doing a bit of extra work or catching up with the coaches or whatever. But at the same time, you've still got to be you. So, and whatever that looks like. It certainly doesn't mean that you turn into a coach for the week or the period of time that you're pre-game. But yeah, you do probably just have to be a bit more mindful of, I guess, the responsibility that you have. And I guess I just want to do it justice. That's all that I ever want to do when, I guess, you get given those opportunities. You just want to do it justice. The best way to quantify that is how then we go out on the field and play.
Let's talk about the way you played. You and Simon Middleton, your head coach, both used the words flat and frustrated, but the scoreline doesn't look flat and frustrated at all. For people from the outside who maybe only watched part of the game, what did you mean by that?
I think, like, if the halves had been the other way around, I don't think we would have said that at the end of the game. I guess your overall emotion sometimes is based upon that feeling of the last 10, 15 minutes or whatever. And I think we just set ourselves really high standards. So the first half was really good. We came out, we did what we wanted to do. We were accurate. You know, not everything always goes your way, but we were able to be in control and, yeah, do most things that we wanted to do. Whereas second half, we just weren't able to do that. We've already spoken about, you know, play up getting stopped, it was stifled, it was a bit more disjointed, and we probably then became a bit more inaccurate. And you have to give a lot of credit to Scotland. They are a much improved side in terms of their defensive capabilities, the individual players they have. They're, you know, they are a much improved side, but we judge ourselves against ourselves, and I just don't think we were happy against our own standards in the second half.
What was good is, even though it was that disjointed, you could always go back. You saw it towards the end of that second half, you went back to the pack, and they were obviously so dominant towards the end with the scrums and then the line-out try. And did anyone get into Poppy for dropping that ball once you drove over in the scrum? It was,
to be fair, she came straight over to me and Ty Sharper, and she just went, I'm sorry. And I don't have a clue what's going on most of the time. I don't know why she's saying sorry. And then obviously the referee's on a jog over to the other side. And she went, I'm not sure. I was like, well, do you think? She's like, oh, I'm not sure. I'm sorry. And I was like, well, I know you are a great rugby player, but you can't be perfect 100% of the time. And the scoreline, it wasn't a game-changing moment. If it was against a France or a New Zealand, then maybe I'd feel differently about Poppy at the back of that scrum. But it was a good time to make a mistake, if there ever is one.
She'd put in such a shift. The discipline, the penalty count, I mean, I feel like this is like deja vu from the men's England team conversations that Mike and Alex had a few weeks ago. But I'm sure that discipline is something that you guys have been talking about since then. Shauna, what's the approach going to be? What needs to change? Is it a mindset thing? Because you guys weren't under scoreboard pressure.
I think it's a mindset change and things like, so we gave a couple away for rolling, actually last season before that would have been okay. So it's just adapting to the interpretations of the law. And in terms of the offside ones, that's not even lazy, that's eagerness to go and get people. It's not people just being offside and staying there, it's actually people just sort of edging forward because they want to go and make the tackle. And we had referee in training today, like keeping an eye on that, obviously discipline in general, but a specific eye on that. So it's having that referee constantly and being 30 centimetres offside in a game, you're giving away a penalty. If you do it in training, sometimes it's not always picked up, so you get into those bad habits, as it were. But it's about us backing our line speed and backing our pressure, and like, let's literally have 30 to 50 centimetres clear, so there's no way that can be given against us, and we're good enough as a team across the board that we can go get, even if we give them an extra 50 centimetres.
It's the dumb ones, isn't it, as well? We want to just cut out the dumb ones that aren't necessary, I think. Certainly, obviously, the weekend against Scotland and this weekend against Italy, like, we really back ourselves to go and get a good result there. So actually giving them penalties and opportunities to march down the field is just something that we don't need to do. Like, as Shauna says, we back our ability to defend. So let's keep doing that until we force something that is an error on their part.
What did you love about being out there? Because now it sounds like I'm just looking for things to pick at. But I'm sure, Shauna, you're smiling and you look like you're in a great frame of mind.
I just love playing rugby. I enjoy it more afterwards. Even during it, I'm like, oh, this is really difficult. Why do I want to do this? Then when the ball near my hands or in my hands, I'm like, oh, I always get all the energy in the world then. But it's the faces in between when you haven't got to be like, oh, come on, just get through it. But I pretty much like love the contact element, and again, very different mentality, forwards to backs, and the fact that so many different types of people are needed to play rugby, and you need different mentalities, you need different mindsets, you need different physical body types, you need different heights. Like, you line 24 of us up in a row, there's such a differentiation in terms of types of people. And for me, that's the bit about rugby that I love, and it's like a cliche, like, I love rugby. But I enjoy myself out there. Like, I enjoy being with other people out there and bouncing off of each other and getting to know each other on field and knowing where one person's going to go, like which person likes to take the lead or which person prefers rucking over, who prefers carrying, and just getting to know each other like that. For me, that's the fun bit, like getting to know other people and how they think.
I think for me, like, I think it's more probably pertinent at the moment just because of the world we're living in, but you don't get many opportunities a year to pull on the white jersey especially, so I think we're really just relishing those opportunities to do that. We're in a Six Nations, yes, it looks a little bit different, but actually we're still representing our country, and I don't think there's a single girl here that would kind of say that that doesn't excite them and doesn't get them going. So I think that's the thing for me, I just love the opportunity to represent my country.
And I love that, Shauna, you talk about how much you love rugby, because, I mean, athletics was your previous first sporting love, surely. I mean, and you did some serious stuff. You trained with Dina Asher-Smith. You went to there's a list here, World Junior Champs, World Youth Games, European Juniors, Commonwealth Youth Games, the Commonwealth Games. How did rugby manage to attract your attention through all of that?
Initially, it was just through, so rugby's a winter sport, athletics is a summer sport. When rugby season had finished, me doing shot put and discus, you'd get the big rugby boys come down in the summer and just sort of slow down our session because they're big boys, their PE teacher told them, you're doing shot put for sports day, go down to the local track. So actually, my first interaction with rugby players wasn't a good one. I was just like, why are you coming here? Slow me down. Like, I've been slugging it out all winter and now the sun's out. You want to come and disrupt our session? So the first bit wasn't positive, but actually it's because of those boys that I guess even knew it existed, because growing up rugby wasn't a sport in my family, in my school, sort of in my upbringing or setting. It wasn't something I knew anything about. And it was those boys who said, I think like you should give rugby a go. Like, they knew me, they knew rugby. And it was just that suggestion. And the first couple of years, it was just a suggestion because I knew I couldn't go and play or even train just because of risk of injury, even things like hands and fingers. If they got hurt, I wouldn't be able to throw, and that's disaster. But it was the sort of little drip feeding from them, like, oh, have you started playing yet? Have you started training yet? So knowing that it was an option, I'm looking into a couple of local teams, and actually where I trained for athletics, there was Blackheath Rugby Club was down the road, and I used to think, well, if I can finish training at this time, then I can go straight off to rugby. But then my coach was like, no, you can't. Like, it's not about logistics on the day, it's the training element of it, doing too much and then you're knackered for the next day, and the whole sort of bouncing effect of it. But it was once I went to Commonwealth Games 2014, made it to the final, which was a pretty decent achievement, but then I kind of fell out of love with the sport for the end of 2014 and coming into 2015 season. And I was never getting paid for it. It was never a sort of career choice as such. I've always worked alongside. So I just said to myself, as any time I stop enjoying it and stop loving it for a long period of time, because obviously you have bad days, everyone has bad days, but stopped enjoying it for a long period of time, I was going to stop. And I actually tried to retire from sport as a whole and just be a normal person, go to work and have a beer, come home, watch TV. That lasted like 2 weeks. And I was like, right, I'm going to find a local rugby club. And literally sent an email to Medway Rugby Club and said, can I come and play? And they said yes. And that was the start of it.
Amazing.
Do you wish now, like looking back on it, because obviously 25 is nowadays quite late to start, but obviously you did all those other amazing things, experiences could have set you up to where you are. Like, if you'd had the choice, do you wish you'd have found rugby, say, when you were 15 years old or 10 or whatever it might have been?
Short answer is no, because like the reason I've been able to accelerate so quickly is because of the other sports and having the foundation. And it's not like I wasn't just a normal person before. I was in the gym 3-4 times a week. I was at the track 3-4 times a week and competing, and the whole sort of discipline of being able to go to work, put in a 9-10 hour shift, go straight to training, that all adds to how I've been able to do so well so quickly in rugby. Potentially in terms of skill level and having like thrown a ball around a bit earlier and kicking, it's just those sort of
kicking.
It's the new thing. You've not seen
haven't.
Kick. But
it sends a drop off a drop goal challenge coming on.
Oh, maybe not. Even being aware of game plays and potentially watching it, that could have happened earlier, because that would then have helped me accelerate even quicker if I knew a lot more about it and not necessarily playing. But no, I'm glad I'd done it in the order I've done it and had the experiences with life and with sport. And now I'm just in this rugby bubble at the moment.
So how much of the of your working life was as a commercial diver? Did you do much in that? Or were you I'm actually intrigued about the gas engineer, because Haskey's always saying he needs to keep the gas man at bay, and I'm thinking we could send you around to shut off his gas, which would be quite nice.
Yeah, I'll only go around if he doesn't call me a gas man, because I'm not a man.
Oh, okay. Granted.
But it's 5 years, that's my first proper job. So first job as a lifeguard, standard first job. And when I was 20, got an apprenticeship with British Gas to be a central heating installation engineer, and stayed there for 5 years. And it was after gas, I went over to diving. Was doing commercial diving for 2 years, and then fire service came up. They all overlap each other. And even technically now, I could go on a commercial diving job. Like, I'm still qualified, still got my medical in date. So if you need any commercial diving jobs, you can still call me.
It's good. It's a good gig, that, isn't it? Was that staying underwater stuff as well, or was it just going? Because on some gigs, you can go down and you stay down, don't you, for a few days or whatever, if you're out on a rig or whatever.
Yeah, that's the real heavy, deep, expensive, very well paid, a lot of money per day stuff. I didn't get into that, but I was a shorter, I was qualified down to 50 meters, but rarely went below sort of 20 meters. And even then, you spent less than an hour in the water, because I've done a lot in the River Thames, which is tidal, and you can only dive on a low tide, so probably get about an hour's work a day out of me, and that just sums me up in terms of how much solid hour, and I've got to have a nap on either side of the work. But yeah, it's not the big heavy stuff that you're talking about. Is like saturation diving. They have funny voices, they've got to breathe different air, and yeah, that's a whole different ball game.
I mean, the dark arts of the front row must have nothing on the Thames. What's the weirdest or the worst thing that you came across under there?
You can't see anything. That's the main thing. You go down, you're feeling your way around everything, and you hear everything that you wouldn't hear up top, but you'll think, right, is that a seal? Because a seal's going to get me. Like, what is that? Is it coming across me? I personally got paranoid about everything I could hear. And then you're mic'd up constantly, so they could hear you breathing, even if you're not talking. They're like, is everything all right up there? Is there any boats coming over or anything? No, you carry on, Shauna. You carry on working for 20 minutes yet. But it is pretty scary. But once you're down there, you're kind of just in your own zone. Because like I say, you can't see anything. You're just by yourself as well underneath. You've got four guys or girls up on top looking after you, knowing that you're safe. But I still say scrummaging's harder though.
Any good wind-ups? Shauna, there's a fin. Stay still. Don't move.
No, you can't. That's the rule. You can't do that. Oh, yeah, there's a few times I'm like... And sometimes it'll be me just like tapping and I'm thinking, what's that? Oh, it's me tapping. It's very scary. One time went down there to do a job, say, in this area, and you get lost because you can't see anything. You get lost. You're like, well, I've got this big thing on the floor, and you go, what is it? Can you tell me about it? You go, well, it's really big. You go, it's about this big. All right, you can't see me. It's about 30 centimeters thick. All right, okay, follow it along. And honestly, it's just a massive piece of wood. But when you're underwater and you can't see anything, in your mind, your imagination's going crazy. Like, oh, it's probably like an aeroplane. It's probably like a bomber's come down from Second World War because we're working in the docks. And actually, they just send the crane down. You have to rig it up to connect it to the crane and it comes up. But it's actually a sense of achievement. You go up because they can't have movement while you're in the water. So you get out of the water and you just stand there watching this massive piece of like boat come up and you're like, yeah, I did that.
a massive piece of boat. That's where your satisfaction came from.
I got it out. I found it. You weren't supposed to find it. And I was able to get it across that there's this big thing down here that needs to come out. Rigged it up underwater, so that's doing all my knots and my ties. And I'm like, okay, remember what it's like at training school? You've got to do this and loop and the bunny and through the ears and up. Is a sense of achievement.
You just seem to love crazy challenges. I mean, that and gas and firefighting, and then. Yeah, I think I'll play prop. Let me go scrum professionally.
Well, to be fair, it was a bit of a, if you want to play, so I started in the back row. If you want to play rugby for England, you'll play prop. I was like, right, I'll play prop. And here we are. And it's worked so far. And I'm actually pretty happy. The first year was a bit, oh, do I have to? Like, oh, I don't want to play rugby for England. Being a prop so hard and it's taken away from all my game. And I'm like, giving myself all these excuses, having these internal conversations with myself. Like, do I want to play rugby for England? No, I really want to just enjoy rugby. But actually, it's worked out in the end. And I'm having a great time at the moment with it.
Do you remember that feeling after your first like proper scrum session when you got moved to front row?
Do you know, it wasn't that feeling. It was even, and I was like, I'd hit, and I was going against a really big loose head at the time. So I've got to keep her up and me up because I'm still learning about all of the scrum stuff. And then I'd stand up and I was literally like, just take 5 seconds to take it in. But the games, well, the training session continued and now they're on the other side. Now this person left on the wing, which is not at all wherever I want to be. And it's like, come on, Sean, you've still got to play rugby. And it was that, how am I going to scrummage more than once in the game and continue to play? Like, it baffled me, but it is just a thing of getting used to it.
It would have been a completely different type of training, though, than what you were used to. Because I assume when you were throwing, it was all power, it was all short, sharp, intense, match load, match shift. Whereas now you had to run around as well as be able to put in those sort of short bursts.
Running, it's not for me. And now when kids ask me about like how much you love rugby, I don't like running. I love playing rugby, so I have to run, but I don't like running. I made it to an international level of throwing shot put and hammer, discus, without ever running more than about 20 minutes at a time. And I was like, now I have to run every day, but for some sort of reason. And like I said, the weights are different and I try and kind of match my weights to what I used to do, but bearing in mind that my body has to be in a different place and I can't be sort of maxing out every other week, etc., and still have to be ready to play on Saturdays. But it's a very different type of training, but because I had my background of training, I wouldn't say it's been an easy transition. It's been an enjoyable most of the time transition, but I still don't like running.
At least they pay you to run though.
Yes. Exactly. that never happened before.
Yeah, that's it's the first thing I said when I retired. I was like, they had to pay me to run. I'm not running anymore. I said, I'll get on a bike, but no running, thank you.
Niche. Not interested in breaking yourself just for the fun of it.
No.
Are you going to do something crazy after rugby, like turn to the Winter Olympics or start playing badminton? I mean, what else is there that you are vaguely interested in?
What are you offering? That's why I'm. If you've got a challenge for me, I'm probably going to take it. If I'm finished with rugby and I need something else to do, I'll have a go. And funny you should mention Winter Olympics, because I have thought about at some point maybe doing skeleton or luge, which is by yourself on a tea tray, head first or feet first down the mountain.
I've done skeleton,
mate.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. I did it in the jump when I was on that TV show. It was all right.
Oh, it's, yeah.
You'll be fine with it. You'll love it. Love it. Is it really?
Is it as terrifying as it looks?
The first handful of times you go down, your brain can't compute how fast you're sort of going. And you're trying to... So unfortunately, I had Amy Williams as my coach. And she was like, right, you hit the wall on this corner. How did you feel? I was like, what corner? I was sort of. I remember quite a lot of them, but I don't remember which one turn six was. But then slowly, as you kept going round and round, you started to remember the course, and your brain had sort of catch up with what you're doing. And it was really good fun. And then you start getting because anyone who's played sport to a high level, they get really addicted to the being coachable. So it's then she's like two taps on turn six, and you then get into it and get going around it. But I think I still got beaten by. Pineapple Studios dancing. Yeah, he still beat me anyway.
Louis.
Yeah, Louis beat me. He's a great athlete. Anyway, I'm just going to definitely go now. Yeah, he beat me, and then Jerry Essex beat me in the final. It's a fucking great show. Anyway, I'm a proper athlete, me.
make that, I'll be putting my hand up for it.
I can't wait for Shauna's future as a Winter Olympian. Emily, I know that your teammates have said before that it's annoying how adaptable you are to different sporting codes, but Shauna must rival you in some of those strange new challenges.
her CV speaks for itself. To be fair, we were in the gym only a couple of hours ago and she's off doing handstands, like up against the wall, walking around. I was like looking over where I'm just doing like a normal dumbbell row or something very, you know, mainstream. And she's walking around on her hands. So I think there's definitely a lot of talents and attributes that Shauna has that I certainly do not. But yeah, when you, it did make me smile when you mentioned badminton earlier. I can't see Shauna as a badminton player in retirement.
Although it's probably not easy on their knees. I'd probably hurt myself doing that. That looks dangerous.
Scales, what, talking of knees, are they knee supports that you wear? Or I was pausing the TV going, because I've seen them before and I wasn't sure whether it was just you roll your socks over like a footballer or whether you some sort of support.
I'm glad you asked if you weren't sure, because people just assume that I like pull my socks up and it's like a fashion statement. It's definitely not a fashion statement. They're pads. So basically, I don't know, when I was about 2021, I hurt my knees and it's called a Morel Lavelle lesion. Probably I pronounced that wrong. It's basically like a degloving of your knee. So structures separate in your knee that aren't supposed to separate and then they fill with fluid. And it all gets a bit messy, basically. So I went through quite a big phase of my career having to have my knee drained after nearly every game. So basically, the knee pad just softens the blow, like when you land on it or someone whacks it, as inevitably happens in a rugby game. So it just kind of lessens the blow and means that, yeah, essentially they don't get as battered as they perhaps once did. But yeah, it's 100% not a fashion statement. I do not enjoy wearing them. And if I could, I would not. But it means that I can play the game. So, yeah,
there you
are. To be fair, and I will claim this, lots of people now wear them. Shauna can testify. Yeah. I reckon I've started, I won't call it a fashion trend, but I've definitely started something.
It's because everyone wants their own show. So they think that's the starting thing.
It's like Samson's hair. They just blame, they credit all of your success to the gear you're wearing.
When I know retirement's coming, I might YOLO and just hit that last game without them on and feel free.
Over everyone's mind. Who is this new woman?
She can still do it, even without the padding.
And then she goes off after 20 minutes with her knees the size of footballs.
So now, speaking of footballs, you have a game this weekend. You have the prospect of international travel, which is really rare. You are crossing into Italy. France was super dominant against Wales, so every incentive to now push past Italy and secure a showdown against them. I'm sure there's plenty of motivation there already, but does that factor into it at all for you, Shauna?
Yeah, we've won two Grand Slams in a row and we can't officially make it three, but we're going to do the best, the closest thing possible. And it's, we love playing rugby. It's, I mean, again, the international travel, it's a privilege because so many people can't do it. There is a lot of paperwork and processes and procedures behind it. And we are not just waltzing off to Italy. But it is an honour, and again, it's putting on the shirt, wearing the rose, representing our country and representing our sport as well, because so many people, they're starting to go back now, but only elite rugby has been happening over the last few months. So every time we step on a field, and even in Premiership games, it's just acknowledging that we're always doing it for the country of rugby, and it's not just a game of rugby at the moment. We are doing it for everyone.
Shauna, you did a bit of a workout, the Allianz Inner Warrior workout video you did during lockdown to try and kind of encourage people to just stay active and still get out there, which I love the energy around that because you are such a shining example of someone who just does not stop.
Yeah, it has been tough during lockdown and there's good days and bad days. But like you say, I done a workout video for Allianz Inner Warrior and it's about using what you've got in terms of tools and equipment or lack of tools and equipment and using bits around the house and trying to maximize the time and appreciate the time and knowing that, like, as a country, we've been through a lot. So the country is now unlocking slowly and community rugby is starting to be allowed. So the series with the Inner Warrior, it was about getting people and their bodies in a place where they could come and play rugby rather than having to sort of do a pre-season. It would be about just preparing for pre-season so you could hit it a bit harder. But it seemed to be successful and our game and Emily and myself, like our game relies on grassroots level rugby and getting women into playing rugby. And it's not always about necessarily winning, and it's more about the values of rugby and being together and being fit and healthy, but just enjoying yourselves. And people joke about sometimes they're a social club who plays rugby, but actually it's okay to do both. And the Allianz Inner Warrior program is a springboard for that, and encouraging people to literally just get involved.
We were talking about it last week, about the fact that this time the Women's Six Nations lives entirely in its own little, you know, kind of calendar gap, and you guys have really good time slots during which people can actually watch your games. Are you feeling a little more buzz around it?
Yeah, I think so. I think I did a virtual press conference after the game, and obviously it was Zoom, but there was the amount of boxes and people that were there staring back at you was a lot more than I've ever seen before. And whether it's easier because they don't actually physically have to be at the ground or not, I'm not sure. But I think, you know, the media slots that are now in our schedule are more than I remember seeing for a while. I think the amount of players being used as well is really good. I think, take us back 5-6 years, you probably only had 5 people that got rotated around the media, whereas now actually it's about the whole squad, it's about everybody involved and kind of putting everybody's faces out there. So that's awesome. Yeah, going away to Italy this weekend, again, another big challenge. I don't think they've played since we last played them in the autumn. So obviously looking closely at all of that sort of footage and getting stuck into that. But yeah, as Shauna says, it's different when you travel. But yeah, we're very aware of, I guess, the potential to be in a Six Nations final, which, you know, is weird in itself because that's not normally a thing. But yeah, we've got to go to Italy and do our job. And I think, as we said earlier, the frustration probably of that second half is definitely a real kind of motivating factor this week.
You're also in Padua, I think, aren't you? I know you're not going to be able to go. There's a great nightclub in Padua, I remember.
Cheers, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
The Sugar Hill Gang were playing last time I was in there about 20 years
ago. Here's what you could have had.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I'm sure you'll get to wash your hands and stuff. It'll be great. It'll be fun. As long as someone takes the tuck shop. How are you finding the tuck shop, Shauna?
I'm avoiding it at the moment, consciously avoiding it, because when I'm at home, I'm all over that kind of stuff, which is not great. So while I'm here and it's not readily available as it is at home, I'm trying to be good.
There's going to be a serious spike in sales the longer these camps go on. Obviously, we're still like early days. They've freshened it up, I think, with a few new goods from a bit of feedback they've had. But yeah, the longer
everyone loves new contraband, don't they?
Exactly.
Shauna, I loved your BBC column and the amount of time you spent on the hair. Emily, are you taking input votes? Are you open to maybe running a poll on, you know, because I saw you had the little plait around the front here and then up the side. It was very nicely done, by the way. And I was wondering whether you would kind of do something a little more out there, or I mean, how flexible are you?
Ideally, it'd be great if you could get a G, S, and R somehow in while I'm around. Not to be too far off brand, but you'd be perfect if you could.
I think Shauna will testify to this. Me and out there aren't necessarily two words that kind of coincide with one another too happily. So I'm pretty happy with my just, you know, 2 bits at the front. Back in the day, I have experimented. There are some photos of like a cornrow situation and a very baby face in the middle. So I've lived through a few and I'm happy with where I'm at.
It's known as the Emily Scarrett 2014 look. If you go to the hairdresser and say, can I have the Emily Scarrett 2014? They know exactly what you're getting.
But do you, I mean, the preparation, it seems to be a pretty serious and intense. Do you guys kind of talk about how you're going to progress it during the championship? Do you all just settle on one look for the entire thing? Like, how much space is there around this? I'm obviously very fascinated. My dad watched it with me this weekend, and he was fascinated by how long everyone's hair is. He kept on saying, why isn't it? Well, I think I'm his reference. So he was just going, these massive ponytails at the back.
Some people just like their set, and it's just for practical reasons in terms of getting it out of their face and the amount of times that you don't want to have to adjust your hairband. And actually, that's the reason why I started playing with my hair out. It's just because the hairband kept falling out. So I thought, well, I'll just leave it out. And now it's kind of become my trademark. but I can do, and the girls are always surprised that I'll do so many different hairstyles with my head for no reason, not necessarily game days. I'll be the one that does the polls and asks Instagram, what look do you want? Have you got any suggestions? But because I could do so much of it and I love it. Like growing up, my hair was like, oh, it's just always knotted and having to comb it out. But now as I've got older, I've learned to love my hair and all the different things it can do. But there's a few different looks, and some people have their set looks, and then you're looking at your Jess Breach. Sometimes she'll have a two all the way down, but then some days she won't
love those.
Like that, so she'll just have two into a hairband. And yeah, there's a lot of science that goes into hair preparations.
The hair deal is a big thing though. Like, we don't have a huge amount of platters in the team. Vicky Fleetwood, Tyche, trying to think, Lark all step up. We've had games before where we've had no platters. And that is genuinely the most worrying part of like the preparation. It's like, well, who's going to do our hair? Like, what am I going to look like? How is this going to work? Like, it's a genuine thing. I think obviously our hairs are all quite long at the moment because of the lack of ability to go to a hairdresser's.
Yes.
But yeah, somebody like a Jess Breach, I think she used to have the two all the way down, had a bit of feedback that it made her look really young. Now doesn't like it. Her mum still really likes it, but she's a bit mature, she's grown, she doesn't like that anymore. So yeah, it's a big deal.
First time today, I'm feeling quite smug about myself. I don't have to worry about any of that. I just get out of bed and this is how it rolls. This is how it rolls.
You truly woke up like this.
Yes, I did. last week, obviously, the other great thing that was happening was the fantasy rugby. How is everyone doing? What scores on the doors? Who's taking the early lead?
Anyone's team, so I don't. We've got proof. Emily and I were on a commercial call last week with some fans, and they said, "Sure, who?" Didn't even know who I was. But Emily Scarrett and Paul McGill. Whoa, they're in everyone's team.
I really battled with. I was looking at the teams for this weekend, trying to put one together. And you are so expensive, Emily. It is. I mean, it's a good thing, but it's also incredibly frustrating because I can't not have
Emma,
you in my
Emma,
team.
Are you about to tell me that you didn't pick me?
I haven't finalized my team yet, but I'm just saying you're very expensive. Okay.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, to be fair, like we haven't got amongst it really. We're living it vicariously through everybody else who's a part of it. But yeah, there's a few people that are pretty stuck into it, pretty happy and sad when their ratings change. We'll see how that keeps developing over the tournament. But it's awesome to have it, to be honest. And then when your friends turn on you and start dropping you in your team, you know, there's problems.
As long as you're playing with those knee pads this weekend, you are in my team.
Right, the question I want to ask, and it might be completely inappropriate, so don't do it. When I was watching the games on the weekend, one thing that sprung to my mind is the size of the ball. Has that ever come up? Do you ever think that the ball's too big?
I personally, I've got big hands for a woman, and I can hold the size 5 ball with one hand, but I wouldn't say confidently. As a ball handler, not a kicker, would prefer a smaller ball. And I get the arguments are in terms of kickers, they'd have to make a lot of changes. But also another argument is will be taken as seriously because like everything else is the same. And that's some of the questions you get when you're like, you play women's rugby. Oh, is it full contact? Like, oh, is it full size pitch? And it'll be a smaller ball. But actually, we don't have to advertise that it's a smaller ball. And it would be a 4.5, not even a 4. But if I had the choice of playing with a smaller ball, I would.
I sat and I actually went through both games quite a lot, and you could see that the difficulty, some where you want to throw an offload, I just don't think it makes sense. To make the game better, you want to see all your skill sets, which you all have, which is offloading. Why can someone like Sonny Bill Williams, who can literally just do that with a ball, it should be the same, that where if you do have a big hand, you have an advantage and you should be able to throw those offloads, but also you've got to give the people who don't have bigger hands. It just sort of struck me that it would open a lot more of the player's skill sets if it was it doesn't have to be a size 4, it's a tailored to you ball. That's what we're trying to promote, is the best way of putting women's sport forward. So it doesn't have to follow, this is what we talked about in the Lions, it doesn't need to follow what the men's game is. It needs its own ball. It's for women to do, that's even if it's just done on average size hands, that then it fits and it works for everyone. I just think it would add to the offloading ability, the be able to throw one through your legs or whatever, which I think is hard for a majority of the girls at the women at the moment because of just because it, the ball is big.
Completely agree. And it's, again, it's not necessarily about equality in terms of treating us exactly the same. It's equality of opportunity. And like you say, if it's going to improve our game as a, and we're a separate brand of rugby, then I'm all for it.
I'm like a full-blown sitting on the fence with it. I get the good sides to it and the potential opportunities and, you know, how it could open our game up. And there's been loads of debate about it. It fluctuates when it comes, rears its head again and people start talking about it. But as Shauna said, from a kicking point of view, it's a lot nicer to kick a bigger ball than it is a smaller ball. And maybe that's just because you need to be a better kicker to find the sweet spot on a smaller ball. I'm not sure.
That's true. No, that's probably true. You do need to be slightly more accurate with your sweet spots. But then that's your problem. It's no one else's problem.
And then the question is,
the forwards are having a whale of a time, but I can't convert anything.
But then again, if it's tailored to you, to your sport for that purpose, it can be worked on, and you hopefully find a way that you shape the panels that it works for both. I just think it's a shame.
Yeah, and a lot of the time when changes are made, they have platforms, kind of semi-pro platforms to trial them on. I know in South Africa, for example, the Varsity Cup has been a platform that plenty of laws and innovations and stuff has been trialed on. The question is then, if you do make a big change such as that, at what point you phase that in? You know, if you trial it, where do you trial it? And then if you do make that change, if you do that across the board in women's rugby all over. But it is an interesting conversation. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us, Shauna. It was lovely to have you join the chat and certainly enlightening. I've never thought of the world of commercial diving as such an interesting career direction. And I'm looking forward to your future at the Winter Olympics.
I'm getting old, Elmer. I'm 31. So these things are just thoughts I have that I don't necessarily can't action them as I get older. Maybe like a Mike Tyndall do the jump celebrity one off, but I don't think I could ever do it seriously. Well, who knows, actually? Who knows?
Never say never.
Never say never.
Okay. Well, safe travels to the 50% of this four-person lineup who gets to cross a border this weekend. That's it for the good, the Scars, and the rugby, together with our friends at Allianz. Good luck to Emily and Shauna and the Red Roses. Of course, you can tune in this weekend. Six Nations action on Saturday afternoon. It's on the BBC, BBC iPlayer from 2 p.m. And this week on the good, the bad, and the rugby, Mike and Alex Payne speak to a rugby league legend, Sir Kevin Sinfield. You can download that podcast wherever you love to find your podcasts, or go check it out on YouTube if you want to see the video version. Thanks again for your company. We'll be back in 7 days' time.